Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started.
Hey guys, thanks for joining me here on another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. We have three great guests, and wow, I'm blown away by the lineup today of guests because I've been a fan of these guys for decades and decades since I was a teenager. I'm trying to think. Yeah, since I was a teenager, a young teenager at that. Frank Bello of Anthrax fame is here, and I have quite a history with this guy. I've interviewed him numerous times through the years, and I even jammed with him once. I was on guitar, John Astronomy on guitar, Frank Bello on bass, Bobby Blitz from Overkill on vocals, and Mike Portnoy on the drums, and we called that band Turtlehead. So I guess Frank and I were in a band together for about three songs. Actually, it was the same song. We played it three times. It was Overkill by Motorhead, and we shot it for our Talking Metal TV show many years ago, about a decade ago. It is on YouTube. I'll try to put it up in the show notes so you can check it out. Again, the show notes are found on talkingrock.net or talkingmetal.com. Also on this episode, we have Ron Keel. I've loved this guy ever since I went and I bought the Right to Rock record, and then I went back from there and discovered Steeler and all the great stuff that he has done since then. Gene Simmons, I guess it was because Gene Simmons produced the Right to Rock. I think that's what initially drew me to it. And I think I saw the video too. Did Friday Night Videos play that? I can't remember. But anyways, Ron, I've loved him through the years, and it is just always an honor to speak with him. I spoke with him about a year ago. That was in January 2018 at the KISS Expo in Atlanta, Georgia. And so he was about due. I love to speak with this guy as much as possible. So yeah, let's get him on Talking Metal every year. We need to have Ron Keel on, and he is back to talk about a lot of exciting stuff that he has going on. So stay tuned for that. And Kane Roberts, again, a guy I saw at the Boston Gardens when I was going to college in Boston. I saw him play with Alice Cooper, and I tell you, he's got a new record out that's really, really good. I mean, I'm really impressed by the new record. Great stuff by Kane Roberts. So, wow, three interviews. Let's start with Frank Bello right now on Talking Metal. Here we go, my interview with Frank Bello. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and what an honor calling in. We have Frank Bello. Frank, how are you, man?
Mark, how are you, man? I'm good. Freezing my whatever you want to call them off right now in New York City. So here we go.
Right on, right on. And you know, Of course, we all know you from Anthrax, but I'm really excited by what's going on with the Altitudes and Attitude album. It's coming out later this week. Get it out. There's some great stuff on this, and I have to admit, I wasn't sure what to expect. This is kind of more heavy rock. It's not like straight ahead metal or anything like that. This is some great sounding stuff. You are working on it with, let's talk about who's involved with this project with you.
It's just Dave Ellison and I wrote a bunch of songs together. Jay Rustin produced it. Jeff Friedel plays drums on it. And a bunch of our friends played on it for us lead-wise. And it's just, this is, it's been almost a little more than four years coming, you know. It's been a while for us. We've been working, thankfully, with our day jobs, Megadeth and Anthrax. And this was a passion of Dave's and I, and just to get it done and just put all the time into it. And we finally have a window of opportunity to put it out now. And the great thing about this, Mark, is a bunch of people from the last, we put an EP out about 4 years ago.
Right.
It got some really great traction. People really dug the three songs. Thankfully, we're very grateful for this. Because look, at the end of the day, it's not a metal thing. It's total hard rock and it never meant to be anything else. It was never meant to be anything else. It was just, this is what came out. And we're really psyched about it because people are really getting into it, and it makes us feel great. We're really stoked.
And you're handling like most of the lyrics and writing the actual words for these songs?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
And are you writing, as far as when it comes to the music, are you writing on guitar?
Yeah, you know, Mark, we've known each other for a while, so I play at home. When I'm home, this is what I do. I sit in my living room, I put the TV on mute, and my wife and kid go upstairs to sleep, and I that's my time. You know, that's just me singing and playing the whole
right.
time. That's what I've done for years. That's kind of how I write. It's just been that. And then I try out songs in open mics in New York City. I go down to Manhattan, and I try out things. Just sign up for like a 7 o'clock. You sign up for on a Monday night.
Wow.
You sign up for open mics, and you just try out your songs. Whatever it may be, it's just me and an acoustic, which I love. And, you know, and you can play rock songs on acoustic. It's pretty easy. And I just find it really cathartic, and it's something I've always done.
That's awesome. And are there certain clubs you go to? I know, like, I used to go to Sidewalk Cafe and do the open mic night there. What clubs do you do the open mic night at?
It's funny. That's one of them. That's one of them. There's a couple of them in the village over there that just opened. Like, they just started letting... It just started opening into open mics and stuff. And look, this is these great little pubs. You just see open mic. Why not just go in there in front of anybody? See, that for me, that's the ultimate challenge. It's like just you and a guitar and just people you don't know. And if it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. Right. I love that challenge.
Late and Out Here are two songs that I heard that are streaming. They sound, again, we're talking heavy rock, hard rock, not exactly metal. Most of the album, this same style as these two songs?
I would say, yeah, but it's a hard rock record. Everybody, put it this way. Everybody's heard the record. You got some, you know, friends I've given to and the record company. They are really psyched because it's a hard rock, but it pays... It pays tribute to what we're about what where Dave and I grew up on hard rock. Let's face it, late 70s. I mean, Boston, Zeppelin, Kiss, Cheap Trick, stuff like that. And this is what came out of us. And I'm very proud to say that just because you can't forget where you came from. I pay tribute to it because I love those bands that were there for me when I was going through hard times growing up and with my dad leaving and all that stuff. And music was everything for me, and it still is to this day. I have to say that, Mark. It still is.
Right on.
You know, it's just a you know, it's another tool in life, and it was very big for me to get out of my bad way and get me looking in more of a positive light. Music was always there for me, so writing songs like this, it means a lot to me, and that's why I live these songs. And I'm just gonna be honest, it's straight from the heart, and I can't write about something I don't know, you know, because I'm not that kind of guy. I'm a straight ahead kind of guy. And this is straight from inside. You'll see with some of the lyrics you'll see in the songs. That's what I've been hearing. And they say it's very personal. And it is, just to be honest.
cool. And there's some really amazing special guests on the record. Let's start with the one I was most excited about, Ace. How did Ace Frehley get involved with this?
Ace is a friend. And look, and Mark, you know this. Dave and I are diehard from way back, diehard Kiss fans. And just asking Ace, I remember Dave was at one of these charity events with Ace, and straight out just asked him, you know, Frank and I are doing this thing. Would you be into playing a lead? And because Ace rules, of course he does. And he said, sure, I'd love to. So we got him and got together with his manager, and we all made it happen. It was, and I love it, dude. You think about it, as if you told the 15-year-old Frank Bello, who's waiting in front of Madison Square Garden, in front of the Kiss right. Ace poster, that Ace Frehley was going to be playing lead guitar on one of the songs that I've written in my life, I would have never believed you. And for me, it's just like that. I still get that feeling of how important that band was, and specifically Ace, in my life. And again, it's one of those things where it's a feather in the cap, and I'm very excited. And he plays great, man. He's a great player. It's Ace, for God's sake. I love it.
Right on, you know? Right. Absolutely. And there's some other pretty big heavy hitters on the record with you. Can you tell us who else joins you on this record?
Yeah. Nita Strauss. For everybody probably knows about Nita Strauss now. But if you don't know her playing, check out her playing. She plays with Alice Cooper. She's incredible. We got
absolutely.
Russ from Steel Panther. Yeah, Russ from Steel Panther. There's so many. There's Nikki Black, who plays on it. She's awesome, too. Another great player in L.A. God, there's so many. Tucci, Christian Martucci from Stone Sour. Just a lot of great. I'm probably forgetting cool. a couple because we've had, you know.
Do you say Gus G? Gus G, right?
And Gus G, I forgot. Yeah, see, there's a lot of great. John Donay, who plays with Anthrax. Awesome. Just, it's just a great thing that Jay Rustin, our producer, has a great Rolodex, and he says, why don't we just call this? And he just calls people in, and obviously we're friends with them, so it all works really nicely.
Right on. And this started as an EP a number of years ago, like you mentioned. At what point did you decide, hey, we need to do a full length with this?
Well, you know, from the vibe we got from the EP, so many people came back and say how much they liked it. And look, dude, nobody expected that. And that's, we're very grateful for that. And we have these songs, you know, Dave and I, we have these songs. It's why not? And we started doing demos, and then we gave it to Megaforce. They really liked it. And it all just like a snowball effect. And it really came out. And I have to tell you, Mark, as I'm speaking right now, some of the reviews, people have been sending me reviews that people who have the record, in advance, I'm overwhelmed by like the way people are getting into it. It really is satisfying, and it's just feels really good.
Cool. Again, we are talking with Frank Bello. The album is called Get It Out by Altitudes and Attitude. And you guys have a handful of shows, right? There's some New York shows, I think, later this week, and then some in LA. Any plans for like an actual tour for this or no?
It's funny. We do these shows this week. We're playing St. Vitus. I don't know when this comes out. This Saturday, the 19th, the day after the record comes out on the 18th, which I'm excited about. Friday, January 18th. We're playing St. Vitus on Saturday. We go next week. We're playing a Musicians Institute in L.A. That's just like a little. It's a little get together, and there'll be some songs be played there. Then we go to, you know what Shiprock is?
I've heard of it. Yeah, it's like cruise, right?
It's a rock cruise. We're playing that, and we call it A&A for short. A&A is playing that, and then we go on tour, which is wonderful. Slash invited us on the tour tour of Europe, which is awesome.
Okay.
So I don't know if we're doing 6 or 10. We're doing like a bunch of shows out there with Slash, so we're really excited about that. And Slash is the best. He's the friend, and he heard some songs. And then he asked for more songs, which was great. His management asked for more songs, and they heard it. And then he invited us out there. I mean, that's what's really cool, man. That's how great of a person. I want people to know how great of a person Slash really is.
Wow.
He doesn't have to bring A&A out because, I mean, his shows were sold out anyway. But because he's so into music, and thankfully he likes what A&A is doing, he invited us out. And I just wanted people to know how great that dude is. He's a great person.
Very, very cool. And Anthrax. Let's see. You guys are doing some dates in Australia and New Zealand, I think, in March. And then is the rest of the year kind of going to focus on just getting the new record together?
Yeah. Anthrax is in quiet time right now. We're going to write, and we're going to put that aside for now and just write songs. That's what it's about. So we'll do some touring with in Australia, Japan, and done. But right now I'm going to be focusing on the Altitudes and Attitude. And hopefully people will dig it.
Is it a totally different, I mean, I'm assuming the answer to this is yes, but it's got to be a totally different songwriting process when it comes to doing stuff for Altitudes and Attitude than it would with Anthrax.
It is, because with Anthrax you have Charlie, Scott, and myself going out doing that, and with Altitudes and Attitudes, literally Dave and I, and to be honest, just in our homes, and then we come together later on. Because I write a lot of the songs right in the room I'm standing in right now is my living room, TV on mute with my little amp, and this is it. And I put the recorder on, and it just flows like that, thankfully. But it's very freeing. It's very, you know, just we try anything with A&A. We'll try anything that, you know, if it sticks, it sticks, really.
Right on. And when you write with Anthrax, do you write on guitar or do you do that on bass?
Yeah. Always. I mean, if I have a bass lick that I want to, like, to start a song or something, I'll record that also. I'll start. But I usually play a lot of guitar, or just rhythm guitar. But right. Most of my ideas are on guitar.
Cool. And I know you've dabbled in acting, actually more than dabbled. You've done some major TV shows and movies. Yeah. Are you doing anything with the acting right now?
Right now, it's about Altitudes and Attitude, but right. I told my agent I'll be having to, because I haven't had any time at all. I mean, we've been out forever with the Anthrax thing. So this is the first time this year I'll have some months off, and you need that time just to go and meet people and read for things. But if it's available, but right now it's definitely about the Altitudes and Attitude.
Very cool. Well, I'm excited to hear you're going to be going out with Slash. There's going to be some New York shows, some LA shows, and
sure.
The album, again, the two songs I heard, they just sound fantastic. We cannot wait to get our hands on the full album. Again, we're talking with Frank Bello of Altitudes and Attitude, and the album is Get It Out, so definitely pick it up. And Frank, it's always a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks, man. But Mark, thanks for the time, and thanks for giving this a chance. I really appreciate it, bro.
Yeah, you bet. Not going down again, and it doesn't matter what. right there, Late, Altitudes, and Attitude. Check it out, guys. It's great stuff. I mean, listen to that song. Fantastic. Good job, Frank, and we look forward to new music from Anthrax, I hope, coming soon. In the meantime, we got that one. That's a great, great little thing that Frank is doing there. Not little, massive sounding thing, right? Altitudes and Attitude. Dave Ellefson, Frank Bello, great stuff. So, without further ado, I guess I don't know if we should do Ron Keel first or Kane Roberts first or second, I should say, because we already did Frank Bello. Let's do this. Let's do Ron Keel, and you guys got to promise me you're going to stay tuned for the Kane Roberts interview, which will close out today's episode. And before we get into Ron Keel, I do want to say this is one of three podcasts. Talking Metal is one of Mark Striegel's, that's me, three podcasts. We have the Talking Rock podcast, which is now back with its like third RSS feed. It's free. Freaking dog is barking. It's like I can't get a freaking 15 minutes of silence in this house. It drives me crazy. Anyways, now I lost my train of thought. I'm totally flustered. I do three podcasts. I do Talking Metal. I do Talking Rock, which I do with Joey Haney. You got to resubscribe to it if you're like, oh, I used to subscribe to that last year. No, that RSS feed is dead. We're actually on like our third or fourth RSS feed for that. The Talking Metal RSS feed is the same feed we started in 2005. I've had it taken over by a company that now distributes it for me, but it's essentially the same. So you could have been subscribed to Talking Metal since 2005 and still be getting it downloaded to your iPhone. However, with Talking Rock, it's gone through some changes. Joey Haney and Chris from CNJ Radio have now taken over the RSS feed, not taken it over, given it new life with a new RSS feed. So subscribe to that. If you dig it, please leave a five-star review on iTunes for my Talking Rock podcast. Support me on Patreon. Ron Keel and I are going to talk a little bit about Patreon as well as his time in Black Sabbath. Yes, Ron Keel was in Black Sabbath. We're going to find out exactly how long he was in the band, what the deal was. It's very, very cool. And I can only imagine, as can Ron and as can everyone else, what Sabbath would have been like with Ron Keel. Because let's face it, after the Born Again record with Gillan, which is an album I love, one of my favorite Sabbath records, quite frankly, they really kind of took a big fall and released some albums that really weren't that good after that. And I can't help but think, Ron Keel, with him in the band, it would have been a different story. But who knows? But we're going to talk to Ron Keel about his time in Sabbath, which was extremely brief, but he was in Sabbath. So stay tuned for that conversation, as well as everything else that Ron has going on, like Keel Fest and his Patreon page. So here we go. This is Cold Day in Hell. That's Yngwie Malmsteen on the guitar, Ron Keel on the vocals. You got Rick Fox on bass, Mark Edwards on guitar. I think Ron played some guitar on this record too. But everyone, of course, always remembers Yngwie. Going way back to 1983, Ron Keel, really one of the guys who discovered Yngwie. He told me the story of him and Mike Varney, you know, listening to tapes and you know, he really wanted Yngwie for Steeler, and he and Mike Varney made that happen. We don't talk about Yngwie in this interview, but definitely. It's a great listen and great conversation, as always, with Ron Keel. Here we go. This is Cold Day in Hell by Steeler, followed by my interview with Ron Keel.
Teeth coming crazy.
it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and what an honor to have back on the show once again the great Ron Keel. Ron, how are you, man?
I am doing fantastic. Been a great week, man, with the Keel Fest announcement, the new lyric video for Road Ready. Oh, so much is happening, and now I'm on Talking Metal with Mark Striegel. How cool is this?
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us, and let's start with Keel Fest, man, because this sounds just great for any hardcore fan of your career, and it's literally your career. I mean, the stuff we're going to hear at Keel Fest from you just spans all the way back to Steeler, to Keel, to the Ron, to, you know, Ron Keel Band, new stuff. So let's talk about how this festival came about, and if you could fill us in on any information you have on the festival.
Man, I don't really remember where the embryo kind of got fertilized, but I remember one day or one night, it was kind of a joke. Hey, I'll put on my own festival, like Ozzy, of course, Ozfest. I'll just call it Keel Fest. And so being the domain whore that I am, I went on to my domain server and I registered the domain, keelfest.com. It's been sitting there for a couple of years, and it's kind of a way to, I think it's a great way to serve both my needs while giving the fans what they want, because my priority is the Ron Keel Band. That's my new album. Those guys have been with me now for almost five years, busting their asses, making great music, doing great shows, and we really are a very tight, close-knit family. Me and Dave Cawthorn, Gino Arce, who's been with me for 20 years, Jeff Kohler, the Rev on drums, and Dakota Scott on keys. I mean, these guys have been through hell and back with me, through ups and downs, through my wife's battle with cancer.
Right.
These guys stood by me, and they could have gone anywhere. They could have gotten other gigs. They could have joined another band, because I said, man, I don't even know if I can tour anymore. I'm going to have to be here with Renee while she goes through this. And we did take a lot of time off in 2017 because of that, but they were right there with me. They were my support group, my best friends, killer band. And so that's my number one priority. However, there is still activity in the Keel camp as well. You know, we do some of these big festival events like the Monsters of Rock Cruise.
Yep.
We did that last year. And I love those guys. That's a brotherhood and a family that's been alive now for 30 plus years. This is our 35th anniversary of Keel. I can't believe that. And those guys are very special to me as well. And they want to play. And they keep bugging me all the time, Ron, let's do some more Keel gigs. And I just can't, because my priority is Ron Keel Band. And then, of course, my friendship with Rick Fox and the Steeler fans and all that goes way deep. And this is a way for me to get the Ron Keel Band out there in a big festival-type setting with Keel and Steeler doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but also a way to showcase the band and our new music and giving the fans those Keel classics and Steeler. For the first time in 35 years, I'm going to belt out those Steeler songs with Rick Fox, who played on the Steeler album, and Mitch Perry.
Wow.
Very renowned guitar player who's played with everybody. And Mitch actually took Yngwie Malmsteen's place in Steeler in 1983, played on the Final Frontier album, been a longtime friend and part of the Keel Steeler family. So he's the logical choice to fill the guitar position. Dwayne Miller from Keel is going to do the drums during the Steeler segment of Keel Fest. So it's really exciting to have the first real Steeler show, do those songs for the first time since then, and put it all together into one three-hour marathon. It is going to be extremely taxing vocally for me. Obviously, it's a three-hour show, and it's not band, break, band, break, band. It is one solid three-hour show where I'm pretty much up there the whole time belting it out. There'll be some transitions and some kind of weaving the story around the music and the show, but it is a three-hour marathon, and I can guarantee you at 12:30 a.m. on May 10th, after that show is over, there's going to be one hell of a party.
Wow, that sounds just insane. And the question is, it's just you doing this three-hour set. There aren't going to be other bands involved in the festival, or there will be some openers or something?
I'm pretty sure there's going to be one opening act. We don't know who that is yet.
Okay.
But our show is 9:30 to 12:30. That's the Columbus gig. May 10th at the Al Rosa in Columbus, a famous venue. We've got a lot of deep roots in Columbus. I lived there for a couple of years, and the promoter, Tong Productions, old friends of mine who really believed in this concept and this idea, and they wanted to have the first Keel Fest in Columbus. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't take this thing wherever it makes sense. I'd love to do a Southern California date to bring Keel Fest to Hollywood or New York, Australia. I'm ready to do, you know, 6 to 10 of these this year if we can get the money up. I mean, literally, right. It is an expensive operation. You got 10 guys, four lead guitar players, and those guys are really expensive. I'm kidding. It's a big operation. You got 10 musicians, a crew, you know, a big production. So it's expensive. It's not like just the Ron Keel Band or Keel. It's 10 men, and they all have to be paid, and hotels and airfare and all that. So there's a lot of money at stake. But I think it's going to make sense. I think it's going to be worth it. I think the gig in Columbus is going to be sold out before we ever hit the ground. And I'd love to do more of them.
Yeah, I hope you can. I'd love to see you up in the Northeast, you know, New York, New Jersey, Long Island. That would be great. There's a lot of Keel fans up here that would love that.
Well, I'm sure now that I'm on Talking Metal, we'll get everybody's attention, and the phone's going to ring off the hook, the email's going to explode, and we'll get some more gigs.
Right. Well, I tell you, I hope so. And there is always new stuff coming from you. I am really digging this new lyric video that you put up, Road Ready. Let's talk about that. It's such a cool rocking song. I love how you throw out titles and little hints of your past in the lyrics. Fun song. And this is coming off a new record, right?
The Fight Like a Band album, releasing March 1st on David Ellefson's EMP label group.
Oh, cool.
We signed with David a little over a year ago. And he has been so supportive of who I am now and what I'm doing now. When we signed the deal, and David and I have been friends for a while, and when it came time to make a new album, I went to him first because I just really admire his business sense, his passion for music, how he runs his business, and his chart success with EMP the last year speaks for itself. So I went to David with the record, and he embraced what I'm all about, which is really the metal cowboy. And there's metal. And there's cowboy, and I'm a little bit of both. And David just looked across the table from me when we signed the deal, and he said, Ron, just be you. I want you to sing your life. And that's what we did. Wrote the best songs we could. Road Ready is a great way to introduce the fans to the new album. It's not, it is one of the heavier songs on the records. And I want to make sure my fans that have been with me through the twists and turns of my career, I want them to know that I embrace my past. I treasure those memories. I love that hard-hitting, screaming, thunderous metal and the fast, up-tempo songs like Road Ready. And when I sat down to write the lyrics to this piece, I used a couple of Keel lyrics as placeholders. Here's the melody, and I got a couple of syllables here that fit. And I thought, well, why don't I just keep that going? And I ended up using 20 phrases, titles, lyrical innuendo, so to speak, from throughout my career with Keel, Iron Horse, the Rattlers, and Steeler. There's references to lyrics from all of those songs. Luckily, after 35 years of making records, I could find a number of really good rhymes.
Right.
Because it's a jungle out there. The devil may care. I mean, there's a lot of good rhymes in there. And I think the fans have really, really identified with that. I think it got the message across. First of all, we're fired up and ready to go. It's a great opening song for the show and a great way to showcase some new music while paying tribute to my history.
Right on. And again, that is the song Road Ready by the Ron Keel Band. And the new album you said is called Fight Like a Band. And it's out when? March, you said? March?
March 1st.
March 1st.
We're having our big album release party at the Grand Falls Casino in Larchwood, Iowa, which is literally just over the border from my adopted hometown of Sioux Falls. That is February 23rd. So we'll do the big album release party where we're going to perform the entire album, top to bottom, and the Keel hits as well and all that. And then the record comes out the following week worldwide on EMP.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on that. I can't wait to hear the rest of the record. Again, I am loving the song Road Ready. I heard it for the first time on your Patreon page, your Patreon community there, which is really, you're doing a great job with this. And I know it's a rather new thing for you. And let's talk about all the cool stuff that people can get when they support you on Patreon, because there's different tiers and you get different access to different stuff. Let's start with what drew you to Patreon.
Well, thanks, Mark, for allowing me to talk about that. It's something I'm really excited about, very passionate about. And it grew out of a desire to, well, we're all online these days. And there's a couple of subscription services. Being a fan of radio and podcasts like yours, and I don't want to plug somebody else's gig, but Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, who is, and I really, right. really enjoy that show. And I've been for many years, I've been a Coast to Coast insider, where you pay a monthly fee and you get all the extra cool stuff. And I thought that would be really cool if I could do something like that. And the issue with Renee's bout with cancer a couple of years ago really brought it into focus, because I was suddenly faced with the fact that I may not be able to tour anymore. I might have to stay here with her. And if that's what it took, I would have done that. She means the world to me. And she went through 7 surgeries, wow. radiation, chemo, the whole deal. You and I have talked about this before.
Yes, we have.
And it was a very scary time. And I didn't know. And I told the guys in the band, I don't know if I can tour, if I can leave. I can't leave home. If she has surgery, I can't. What am I going to do? I can't just say, bye, honey. I'm going to go on the road. I got to stay here. And I'm trying to find a way where I could, quote, work from home. Don't we all just want to work from home anyway? I mean, that's a dream gig.
Yeah.
And I was having a couple of web designers put together a, quote, subscription site. When I found the Patreon platform, and it was tailor-made for guys like you and me. And so what it is, it's a subscription platform. You pay $6.99 a month, and you get all the cool stuff. And video, audio, experiences, and we are just scratching the surface with what we're offering at patreon.com/Ron Keel. Mark, I consider it to be like, it's like my living room online, all right?
Yeah.
I've got a fire in the fireplace. I got some cool stuff on Keel TV. I got some music up on. Once you come on over, and we'll enjoy this together in my house online. Now, if you were coming to my house, you'd probably take a shower. You'd probably put some gas in the car. You might even stop on the way and buy a 6-pack. For the cost of that,
right?
You can subscribe online and join me in my Patreon page. And I'm putting a lot of the old Keel concerts from the actual debut of Keel, the first show we ever did. Some of the big shows like Rocklahoma, M3. And these are things that they're not real. You're not going to manufacture a DVD. They're not pro shot broadcast quality. One camera from the sound booth usually, but you get to experience that moment in time. Unreleased audio. In fact, I am going to be uploading for the first time that nobody's ever heard this. My Black Sabbath demo is going up on Patreon very soon in honor of the Emerald Sabbath project, which is coming out February 15th.
Yeah, which we're going to talk about
for
sure.
If I've got something cool in my archives, in my vault, whether it's audio, video, fan experiences, here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing my first concert broadcast from the Fan Cave, which is basically my basement, where I've got my little stage set up in my basement. I'm going to play some acoustic songs. I'll be online with you. I can take requests. We can communicate and interact during the show. And it'll be Ron Keel live from the Fan Cave. This is what I built when I didn't know what the future held for me. I knew I had to keep entertaining people. I had to keep doing what I do, but I wanted to try to find a way to do it from home. And patreon.com/Ron Keel has provided me with that platform. So I hope everybody will check it out. At least just look at it, check it out, and see if it's something that you're interested in. And I tell you, Mark, I haven't had one subscriber who has not renewed. I mean, you can cancel at any time. It's $6.99 a month. For the all access, you can go hardcore, and if you're hardcore, that's $25 a month. But I load you up with all the cool swag and free stuff in the mail every month and all that. But we haven't had anybody who subscribed that has not re-upped the following month because everybody's digging it.
Wow, and it is very cool. I am a Patreon, a subscriber for your page, and I am loving it. I cannot wait to hear the Black Sabbath demo. I want to talk about Sabbath. And I also just, before we go there, I wanted to say that, you know, I signed up for Patreon probably a year ago or so, and I really didn't do anything with it. I told my listeners, oh, you can give me money on Patreon, but I didn't do anything. I wasn't giving them rewards. I sent them all a t-shirt. That was about it. And you've inspired me to step up my Patreon page and really turn it into something that's more exciting for the Talking Metal listeners. So I just want to thank you for giving me the inspiration, because you are working it so hard and doing such a great job on your page that it's inspired me to kind of kick into a higher gear with my Patreon page. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you as well. I am a paid follower of yours on Patreon as well. And I enjoy your interaction, your messages, and what you do with both your podcast, your Patreon, all that stuff. I'm a fan. That's, you know, it's worth that extra couple of bucks a month to get that firsthand interaction with guys like you.
Well, I appreciate it, Ron. And, you know, we are going to right now talk about something I don't think, you know, you've been on the show a number of times. I don't think we've ever gotten into your history with Black Sabbath, because there is this cool tribute record coming out called Emerald Sabbath, and you're on it. And I remember, I think it was picking up Circus Magazine or Krang Magazine, one of those magazines, and reading that Ron Keel was the new singer of Black Sabbath. So this was obviously a short-lived little part of Sabbath history, of your history, but it's very, very interesting history. So let's go back right now to your history with Sabbath, and also mention that you're doing the song Trashed, right, on Emerald Sabbath. Let's start there, actually. The song Trashed. Who's joining you on this song?
I actually have three tracks on Sabbath's Ninth Star album. And the cool thing is, Trashed, the Ian Gillan song off Born Again, I think it was Bobby Rondinelli on drums, and I'm not sure who else played on that track. The entire list of the track listing and who played on what.
Is it Vinny? Is Vinny Appice on that?
Vinny did the other two with me.
Okay.
I've got Die Young, the Dio classic from Heaven and Hell. And I got to sing that with Vinny Appice on drums, Rudy Sarzo on bass, and my guitarist from the Ron Keel Band, Dave Cawthorn, on lead guitar. So what a thrill to be able to, and also did an Ozzy song, Hole in the Sky, the opening track on the record. So I covered all three bases, got to finally make my dream come true of kind of recording with Sabbath and sing three of those iconic songs from each of their iconic vocalists for this project. So certainly a dream come true for me. And just to be a small thread, a very, very small thread in the tapestry of that legendary band, I'm honored.
Right.
It was a great time for a few days back in 1984 when I was doing the original Keel demos at Pasha Studios in Hollywood, where Spencer Proper had just produced and released Quiet Riot's Metal Health album, which, you know, sold 10 million copies.
Yep.
Really broke the floodgates wide open for all of us. So I was in there recording the Keel demos. Spencer heard my voice, and he was signed on to produce the new Sabbath album, the follow-up to Born Again at the time. Ian Gillan had just left the band. And we're looking for a singer, and Spencer basically got me the gig based on the strength of those demos. So I had to go in, and Spencer was trying to push outside songs on Sabbath. He was trying to make them into a commercial 80s hair band, and Tony and Geezer just weren't having any of it. That's why the whole situation imploded. But Dana Strum produced my Sabbath demo, and you know, I never did get to record with them or tour with them. So this Emerald Sabbath release is kind of a dream come true for me, because I got to sing some great stuff, and I'm really proud of the results. I didn't just get to sing it, man, you know, and I'm not tooting my horn or nothing. I crushed it, and I'm really, really proud of those vocals. And Ronnie Dio was a friend of mine. He was a huge help to my career. He took us on tour with Dio and the entire Sacred Heart Tour throughout Europe, 14 countries in 1986, because Ronnie believed in us, and I would be proud to play this for him. I'm sure he's up there listening in heavy metal heaven, and I think he would approve. So that's really to me, that's all the justification I need. I can hear it and listen to it, and I'm really proud of it, and I think Ronnie would dig it as well.
Yeah, and there are some real heavy hitters on the Emerald Sabbath record, which I believe comes out next month. You got, from Ozzy Osbourne's current band, a good friend of mine, actually, Adam Wakeman is doing some songs on there. You got former Sabbath vocalist Tony Martin, again, Vinny Appice, Dave Walker, who was briefly in Sabbath back in the 70s when Ozzy left, before Ozzy came back to do Never Say Die.
Right.
Yeah, so there's some really cool stuff in here, and all these players, or at least most of the players on the record, have a direct connection with Sabbath, including you. So to just circle back around, so it's post Born Again, and you are in the studio. They actually, the thing that makes it a little curious to me is they actually announced that you are going to be the new singer, but you're telling us here that it was really only, what was it, a week? Was it how long were you officially thinking that you were the singer of Sabbath, and why did they jump?
It was three solid days, I can tell you.
Three,
that.
Okay.
But the thing was, they had actually, we'd had several meetings. I had gone to Don Arden's office. Don Arden, Sharon Osbourne's father, was
yes.
Sabbath's manager at the time.
Yep.
He sat me down. He laid down the law, told me the rules, told me what my pay was. I've got a signed contract, all that stuff. And he said, "You do not say a word about this. If word gets out, really, I was under a gag order.
I could
not talk about it, could not say anything. And of course, I'm doing whatever the hell they want me to do. It's Black Sabbath, man. Tell it the lie." And I went in to tell my guys in Kiel. My band had only been together at that point, gosh, maybe a month. I had just put Kiel together. It was my chance to go out on my own and do my own band with my own songs. And we were headlining a big venue in Pasadena, Perkins Palace, 1,700 seat theater there. And I had to go into my band and I set them down. I said, "Guys, man, I really appreciate you guys, all the work you've done and all the preparation and getting ready for this Kiel show. But that first Kiel show was going to be our first and last. That was it." And I set my guys down and told them that I am joining Sabbath. The contract is done. We've come to terms, and I am the new lead singer in Black Sabbath, but you can't tell anybody. Shh, don't tell anybody. This cannot get. And the guys were Mark Ferrari, Brian Jay, but they were my buddies. You know, they're cool. And so I said, "Don't tell anybody, all right? Absolute hush hush." I leave the band meeting, go out in my car, start up my engine, and on the radio, KLOS radio, Los Angeles, it's just been announced that Ron Kiel is the new lead singer at Black Sabbath. I go, "No, I was just talking about it on the radio."
Wow.
And I go home, click on MTV, and there it is on MTV. Big news, Ron Kiel, the new lead singer in Black Sabbath. And then, of course, the Kerrang feature. I think you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Full page announcement that Ron Kiel was the new lead singer in Sabbath. So it's very well documented. I think, I don't know who leaked the information. It wasn't me. But the documentation was there at the time. And, to be honest, there were, and if you've read Lita Ford's book, I don't want to say anything negative about anyone, especially Tony Iommi, one of the greatest rock gods of all time. But Tony was going through some stuff
right
at the time. And there was, what Tony says in his book, though, by the way, his book is wrong. I'll call him out on that right now. He said, "Well, Ron gave us a demo tape and there were two singers on it. And one was on side A and one was on side B. And they wanted the guy on side B. The other guy, they didn't want me. That's bullshit.
Right.
I got a signed contract and an announcement on MTV, and it was a done deal." That's whatever Tony said in his book. That's not true. And the fact is, Mark, what they wanted at the time, they desperately just wanted Ozzy back.
Yeah.
Ian Gillan had just left. They really just wanted Ozzy back. I could have nailed the gig. I feel very confident that had I had the opportunity, I would have gone on stage and in the studio and really been at home in that band. And I think, who knows what might have happened.
Yeah.
But once again, I get to relive that dream with this Emerald Sabbath project.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the Emerald Sabbath album. It just has a really cool collection of people on it. It's definitely something I'm really looking forward to hearing. It is interesting because after that point. Like I, like you said, I can't wonder what would have happened with you and the band, because I really feel like they went into a very strange period releasing that album. Tony, they called it Tony Iommi's Black Sabbath. The what was it? Seven Star, which a lot of people think is potentially the worst Black Sabbath record of the entire catalog. Some people say it's Forbidden, which was a number of years later with Tony Martin. But yeah, it just seemed like creatively they were very unfocused at that point, and you can't help but wonder what you could have brought to that that dynamic.
Well, now you can hear at least how I would have gone on Gillan, Ozzy, and Dio on those songs. And this is 35 years later. I was 23 years old at the time. And I do think I sing better now than I ever did. Some of those super high piercing screams are no longer in my vocabulary for some reason.
Right.
But in terms of tone, delivery, quality of executing a master vocal in the studio and being able to cut a gig like Keelfest live.
Yeah,
At this stage of the game, I'm really proud of the hard work and the results. And really, that's all it is, Mark. It's not talent. It's just hard work, man. I bust my ass every day. I sing every day. I talk a lot, as you can tell. And when I speak, I try and speak in a strong, sharp tone so that I'm not pushing air through my vocal cords and putting wear and tear on them. I'm one of those guys that the more I sing, the more I work, the better I get. And I could not stand to take a month or 2 months or a year off. I think I would die, and I think I would suck when I came back. So that's why I'm not stopping.
Right on. And I'm totally psyched for everything you have going on and your hard work. I can definitely see it on Patreon. You are really working that. And just to round out the Sabbath thing, one just final question on that, and then I'll shut up about Sabbath. But so you never actually got in a room and jammed with them. Is that correct? They had listened to the demo and liked the demo, and they were going to bring you in on that with Spencer's approval.
If I had the chance to get in a room with them and jam, it would have been a done deal, man.
Right.
I'm telling you right
okay.
now. There would have never been any doubt or compromise or looking back. I did not get that opportunity. The demo that I cut was outside songwriters that Spencer was trying to sell these songs to Sabbath and make them, as many producers and record companies in the 80s did, they would push outside songs on the hard rock and metal artists because they wanted to, quote, have a hit song. And these were cover songs. At least one of them ended up as a single for King Cobra, a song called Hunger.
Oh, wow. Right.
And that's one of the songs that I cut that was going to be a Black Sabbath song that Spencer was trying to get them to record. And Spencer, I'm pretty sure, I might be wrong, I'm grabbing at straws here, but I think Spencer did produce that King Cobra album. And that's why King Cobra recorded the song Hunger.
Very good.
Sabbath didn't want it, and I think he produced that record, if I'm not mistaken. But it was one of the songs that I did. And there were some absolutely hellacious screams on this demo because I was trying to show off. I was trying to check out what I could do. So, man, it really is over the top. And Dana Strum producing it, and I talk to Dana about this all the time. So we did a gig together just a few weeks ago. When I opened for Slaughter, and Dana talks about it all the time as well. It was one of those days where Dana's just pulling this stuff out of me as a producer and just pushing me to my extreme limits. And I don't know how good it is, but it's really, really, it's over the top. These heavy metal scream. And you know, they call me the screamer, right? That's what I did back in the day. So, this demo certainly lives up to the hype.
Cool.
In that regard, anyway.
And we're going to hear that. The Patreon supporters and subscribers are going to hear that on Patreon sometime soon, right?
That's right. I have never played it for anyone. I've never released it. In fact, when we had a band house with some of the guys in my band, this is, gosh, 20 years ago, I had it on cassette, and they all played us the Sabbath demo. I want to hear the Sabbath demo. I've never played it for them. In fact, I couldn't trust these guys as far as I could throw them. So I took the cassette tape and I put it in the tarantula cage because I had a number of tarantula spiders throughout my life. I love them as pets. Great rock star pets, by the way, because you can throw a few crickets in there, go and throw it for a month, come back, and the spider's just fine. very low maintenance pets. But anyway, I put the cassette tape in the spider terrarium with the tarantula so the guys wouldn't stick their hands in there and try and steal it in the middle of the night when I'm sleeping and give it a sneak listen.
Oh, wow. Great stuff. I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait for the new Ron Keel Band album, Fight Like a Band. I'm going to be interviewing David Ellefson on Thursday, so I'm going to be sure to mention Ron Keel to him and get him to talk about your relationship. And it's always a pleasure, Ron. And good luck with Keel Fest. If you can get it up to the Northeast, I will absolutely be there. And I'm tempted to look at the calendar and see if I could somehow get down to Columbus, Ohio. It would be a blast to be there and rocking with you.
Man, it will be great. Whenever we run into each other, it's always a thrill, and it's great to see you. Great to be back on the show, Mark. And next time we talk, hopefully you'll be making a guest appearance on the Roncast.
Oh, I'd love that.
I'd love to interview you.
Yeah, man.
I know you've got some great stories, great history in this business, and I would love to turn the tables and put the microphone on the other side, so to speak, and interview you for my show.
Well, I love talking about myself. It's my favorite subject, actually. So, yeah.
Nice.
Keep me posted, man.
I will. Thank you for listening, and keep talking metal. Let's do it.
Ride by Ron Keel. I wanted to play that new song we were talking about during the interview, but I didn't find it on iTunes, so we'll just have to wait for the new Ron Keel Band album to come out. It is fantastic. You can, if you're one of his Patreon patrons, you can hear that song on the Patreon page, and I think it's on YouTube now too. But anyways, the song we just heard there, The Last Ride, you can purchase that on iTunes. Guys, use our Amazon links, support us
please join me on Patreon. There's so much cool stuff going on there. I don't know if I finished my podcast rant from earlier, but I meant to say there's the Talking Rock podcast. There's my Talking Metal podcast. You can get those for free on iTunes. But I don't think I even mentioned it. There's now the Mark Striegel podcast. It is available only to our Patreon patrons. So if you need a third podcast by me, you can join us. Even a $2 a month pledge on Patreon will get you that third podcast. I'm going to try to do once a week with that. So the Mark Striegel podcast is happening, guys, and it's only for the people who are contributing on Patreon to my page. And we're putting up awesome other content, video content, all sorts of cool, cool shit. So check out my Patreon page and support Ron Keel for sure. And definitely, definitely get this Kane Roberts record. Holy Christ, is it great. It is just a fantastic listen. The New Normal by Kane Roberts. Yeah, man. Let's hear a track off it right now. This is Beginning of the End with some very special guest vocalists on this track. And Kane's going to tell us who they are during the interview. So stay tuned for that. Although you probably can figure it out by listening to the song, who these guest vocalists are. This is off the new Kane Roberts album, it's called The New Normal. The song is called Beginning of the End.
Until you're broken, I'll cut their evil tongues. Their corporate lies will bend your mind. Tell me what I need.
Make believe you have faith in me. Spinning into madness on your own. It's the beginning of the end. Say goodbye to the world.
is Mark Striegel from the Talking Metal podcast. And what an honor. A guy that I was such a big fan of back in the day when he was with Alice Cooper. And he had a great solo record that I was really into called Saints and Sinners. The one, the only, Kane Roberts. Kane, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mark. It's great to talk to you. It's been a while. I kind of crawled out from under the abyss. So here I am again.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because, like I said, I was a big fan of you back in the day. Saw you at the Boston Gardens playing with Alice Cooper, and it was just a great night. I loved that concert. But I wanted to, you know, when they sent me the record, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. The album I'm talking about is The New Normal. It comes out later this month, and I put it on, man, and it is, I'm not just saying this to kiss your ass, it's amazing. It's fantastic. Great job, and there's so much great stuff on here that I want to talk to you about.
Great. Geez, thanks, man.
Yeah, no, seriously, because of course I want to talk a little bit about your history in the old days, but let's just start with what's going on now. The New Normal. I mean, first of all, the opening cut, I just put this on. It just hit me right in the face. So good. Above and Beyond. Let's talk about who joins you on this cut, because it's kind of a historic reunion, in my opinion, at least.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, as I walked into the project, I've been listening to a lot of different music, a lot of, you know, new music. And of course, you know, it's impossible. And I could never like forget my past and the great music that I listened to before and my old influences, you know, be it Led Zeppelin, Van Halen, whoever it is. So
right.
It wasn't one of those projects where I said, oh, you know, I've got to sound this way. I've got to sound that way. I just wanted to sound like me. And the other thing I did, though, was, you know, walking into something like this, I wanted to get, you know, different writers involved and everything. So this song actually features work, you know, writing work by Brent Smith from Shinedown and this other guy, Dave Bassett. And so what I did was, I got this song and I changed it, did a whole bunch of stuff to it to make it kind of a personal thing. And then I ended up, you know, enlisting guys like Kip Winger and Paul Taylor, and of course, you know, Ken Mary and,
wow,
you know, guys that I used to work with before. Because, you know, these guys are still prolific. They're still doing stuff. I mean, Ken is playing with Flotsam and Jetsam now, which is like, that's a tough ride on the drums. And he's kicking ass with it. And, you know, of course, Kip never stops. He's doing his solo stuff, which is amazing, and stuff with Winger. And, of course, he got that Grammy nomination for classical music. So, you know, these are guys that are just still very active. And, you know, Paul as well. So I knew that, you know, if I asked them to do it and they said yes, I'd be in great company. So,
yeah. I mean, and the guests that you have on this record are just great. We'll talk about some more of them. But first off, sure. I mean, in your past, you've worked with some of the biggest rock producers really of all time. I mean, we could go through a list of some of them, you know, Desmond Child, Michael Wagner, Bob Ezrin. You've worked with, and who's the Bo Hill, right? I mean, there's just so many of them.
Yeah.
Who's producing this record? Because it sounds just as good as anything you've done in the past.
Well, what we did was, I decided two things. One of them was, you know, I wanted to make sure I wasn't recording at my house. I really feel like a comfort zone is something that's sort of antithetical to doing something creatively great. In other words, you have to put yourself into a different situation. You got to take yourself away from your refrigerator. And, you know, I don't think I play great guitar solos in my underwear, you know.
Right.
So I ended up getting this great studio, and I worked with this guy, Alex Track, who owns the studio. So now, Mark, the record took me 3 years to make.
Okay.
And I was lucky enough to have a full-on studio for 3 years, and he and I put the record together. So it's produced by me and Alex, who's a great musician in his own right. And, you know, instead of having some other entity come in and work on the record with me, because this was going to be a bit of a crawl, because I hadn't been recording and playing live. I'd been playing music and writing and singing and stuff, but I hadn't been, you know, out into the public jet stream, so to speak. So I ended up getting in there, and the record company let me take 3 years to record this. I mean, normally it's a month or two or three, and 12 months, 14 months into it, you know, I got back to Frontiers and Serafino and Mario, the owners of the company. And they said, just make a great record. So I was in a great situation. And so it was Alex produced it and myself.
Very good. Well, it sounds great. The songwriting is great. The guests that you have sound great. I mean, let's talk about Beginning of the End. A couple real heavy guest vocalists on this track with you. Can you tell us who's on that track with you? A track that I just love, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, I was singing the sort of a rough vocal over the track. And I just thought, you know, as I looked at the words and I was thinking about it, I said, geez, you know, if Alice Cooper delivered these lines, and I didn't want Alice to come in and sing one line or make a statement or something. I wanted him to do a duet with me. So I called him up and, you know, he happened to be in town. And I said, you know, this was like 9 p.m. or something. And he said, I'm in town. He said, I'll be right over. So it was that easy. And he came over and
that's amazing.
Yeah. And then I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I wanted to do something unexpected on all the songs. I wanted to add something a little different, you know, and it, you know, it's hard work. But once you get into something like this, there's nothing that you're kind of afraid to get into. So Alyssa White Glues from Arch Enemy is just one of my favorite artists. I think she's walking around and she's knocking down walls and busting glass ceilings wherever
right
she
on.
Goes, you know. And I just said, how great would it be if Alyssa falls into the middle of this song and detonates the whole room? So I sent her the track. Once she heard it, she got back to me immediately and said yes. And then the final guest I got was the drummer from Baby Metal. His name is Aoyama Hideki. And if you ever hear that band, you know, whatever you think of them, I just love it.
I love them too.
And I like their whole thing. I'm just really into it. But if you check out the drums, it's like a machine gun back there. And he gave me two versions and he said, I hope this is okay. And of course, you know, they kick ass. So yeah, I was lucky to get a big three on that. And Alyssa and Alice really performed incredibly well.
So you call up Alice, the story you just told us, and how much have you been in contact with him through the years? I mean, is it decades? Is it years? Do you stay in touch on a regular basis?
Well, Alice and I, one of the reasons I ended up working with him, you know, I walked in the room. I didn't look like, you know, your average guitar player or rock musician. And, you know, I'm not saying average in the sense that they were not great. I'm just saying they, you know, they're sort of normal look. And I think they liked that at first. It was something different because those guys were off Broadway their whole lives, you know. And Alice and I became best friends, Mark, the first day. And he and I talked about it later. We didn't get it. We just became great friends. We ended up writing the first day we met in Manhattan. So through the years, that has maintained. We may not have spoken every day, but when we see each other, it's just like we had taken no time off at all. So I had been in touch with him from time to time. I went to some of his live shows, of course. I saw his amazing new band and, you know, Nita Strauss, who I ended up asking to play on the record as well.
Yeah.
And so when I said to him, he said, hey, how you doing? And I said, I'm in the studio, you know, and I'm just wondering if, you know, you could come out. He said, are you in the studio now? He said, I'm in town. I'll be right over. And he and Cheryl just showed up at the studio. He hung out for 3 or 4 hours singing and we're laughing and everything. I mean, I had these pants on. This is a typical thing. I had these pants on that, you know, these jeans that were like really worn out.
Right.
So, you know, we were sitting there and there was a quiet moment and Alice said, hey, you know, there is one point where you throw the pants away. You know what I mean? So, yeah. You know, we're still joking with each other and having fun. And, I was just amazed at how quick he just caught on to what the song was about. When he says, their corporate lives will bend your mind, you know, only Alice could deliver the line like that. So, and then, you know, we also, I shot a video and, I shot it in Vancouver a little while ago. And I thought the only way I could do a video for this song is if I got Alice, me and Alyssa in the same room on the same day. And I was able to pull that off. So the video that's coming out is going to feature all three of us.
Wow. I can't wait to see that. When do you think that'll hit? Soon?
Yeah, it's going to be out, you know, right around the debut of the album on the 25th.
Great. January 25th, The New Normal by Kane Roberts. What a return. Again, this album, I listened to it all the way through and I was just blown away because usually, you know, you get a few good songs up top and then it kind of fades off, but not with this. It's one great song after another. The performances are potent. I don't have time to talk about every single song, but let's one more. I wanted to just ask you about Leave This World Behind. I don't know, something about these lyrics, man, they really touched me. And you know, I felt like emotional, like I there was a sad feeling, but then like a hopeful feeling I was getting from the song, you know, turn this around, you know, the savior that kills. There's some powerful lyrics in this song. And what did these lyrics mean to you? What are you trying to say with this song?
Well, I think, you know, we're at a point now with all the social media, the sort of, you know, outing of who we are as people and the photos and the selfies and everything. I think we're in a position now where a lot of people are sort of judging themselves all the time. And, you know, we all go through, you know, incredibly hard times. Life isn't easy. You know, it's one of those things where we get blindsided all day and night. And, you know, it's the thing that reflects the good times. And so the point of the song is, you know, you run into these dark places, and what you try to do is, rather than stay there, is just leave your world behind and turn it around, you know. And it's so funny, that line that you picked on there, you're a savior that kills,
you do
all these things wrong, a hater and love, you know. It's all right. You know what I mean? Just be who you are.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing about that song was the middle section with the guitar solo. I decided to just take the band out and just have this sort of percussion band behind me doing the solo. So, you know, we just felt like as we stepped into each song, we were going to do something a little different. And, you know, actually, a lot of the messages, Mark, on the record are actually more hopeful and positive, you know. So I'm glad you picked up on that. That's one of our favorites.
Yeah.
I wrote that with Brent as well from Shinedown. So.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. And great record. Again, we're going to be hyping it on Talking Metal. We encourage everyone to get it. In my opinion, one of the first really great releases of 2019, The New Normal by Kane Roberts. Kane, I gotta, of course, touch upon some stuff from your past before I let you go.
Sure. Yep.
First of all, Alice Cooper and Bob Ezrin, the great Bob Ezrin, has just done so much great stuff, from Pink Floyd to Kiss to Alice Cooper. But those records you were on with Alice were not produced by Bob Ezrin, yet it appears that you had a relationship with him, or maybe still have one, because I know like the Rod Stewart record he did and the Berlin record he did, you were involved with those. So can you tell us a little bit about your history and your relationship with the great Bob Ezrin?
When I went down to meet Alice, it was in a big office called Alive Enterprises, which was the New York office of Shep Gordon, who was managing
Shep,
Alice.
Yep.
I mean, he's managed everybody, yeah, from, you know, Teddy Pendergrass to Raquel Welch to, you know, Blondie, all sorts of bands. And I
saw the documentary on him. It's great. That documentary it's a fun watch.
Yeah, Supermensch, you know, with Mike Myers made that. So I go into the office with Ezrin. And, you know, I'm one of those guys, I don't get nervous, so I sort of go with the flow. But I walked in and, you know, Bob's there. He's got this huge picture window behind him, you know, looking out onto Manhattan. And I swear to God, my chair was like purposely low. You know, I'm looking up. It was like looking up at the Wizard of Oz or something.
Right.
And, you know, he starts telling me, you know, what the opportunity is and what the situation is like with Alive and how to, you know, and with Alice and all that thing and what they were looking for. And, you know, so that was sort of my initiation of fire. And then I go into the next room and I'm with all these people that changed, you know, culture with Alice and Shep and this big entourage and everything. So, you know, Shep, Bob was my first liaison into the project because he was the one that heard my writing. He was the one that received the tape from this guy, Don Passione, over at Screen Gems, which is, a long gone company. And so my first relationships with him is he's very protective of Alice. So my first writing sessions, Bob was there.
Right. Okay.
And we didn't get along that well. I mean, he was like, you know, he was sort of pushing me in some areas. He was testing to see what I was like. And, you know, and at one point it just flipped and we became friends. Once I think he trusted me that I was there, not just to, you know, grab money. I was there. I was in the flow. and I cared about Alice. I cared about everything that he and I produced. So, for example, you know, to show you what type of guy Bob is, I was at a very fancy restaurant for me, you know, because I didn't have a lot of money then. And I was just kind of, you know, but I had this girl that I was dating and I wanted to impress her. So I take her to this restaurant, a very fancy restaurant. And we're sitting there at the table and we're talking. I'm a little stiff and nervous, you know. And suddenly I hear this commotion behind me and this guy falls against my table and knocks the food off and everything. He goes, "Hey, you're fucking great." And he looks at me in his bedroom and he goes, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And he stands up and he goes, you know, "Replace all their food." And he, he walks away. You know, it's like that's the type of relationship we've had since then. And, you know, Ezrin is amazing. The reason he didn't produce it is like he never intended to. I think what his main production move was to get me to find somebody to write Alice that Alice can trust and that will, you know, grow into something, you know, a relationship that could, you know, work live, that sort of thing.
And, you know, at that time, that's the Constrictor record in 86, which was followed up by Raise Your Fist and Yell in 87. It was Alice's comeback. You know, he had been kind of out of the hard rock world. And for me, a guy who really was an 80s metal guy, you know, I knew about Alice's stuff from the 70s, but that was really my introduction to Alice, those two records. And and was there a conscious effort like, okay, we need to make Alice, we need to get him out of the 70s and put him in the 80s? And you know, because for that time, those albums were very contemporary sounding.
Well, I made sure that I didn't say those words, you know. In other words, the respect for Alice's past is enormous. And it's one of those things that sort of floats above the organization. So, you know, he knew that, you know, I was into, you know, current bands. He knew that I was listening to even Ozzy and every, you know, I was just into all that stuff. But what I said to Alice was, and by the way, he wasn't a passive player. Alice is a very powerful artist and has a really heavy sense of who he is. But I said, you know, you're coming out of rehab. I don't want people to think that you survived rehab and here's your music again. I want people to think that you've come away from this kind of, you know, rebuild at like a nuclear Alice, you know. So, you know, you can tell from there's a tape out there, I guess, you know, VHS at the time, a recording of the Nightmare Returns, you know, the first show. And you can tell that, you know, as soon as Alice hit the stage, the band's heavied up Welcome to My Nightmare and the whole show. And that's what that point was. I said, you have to come back and just, you know, be able to kill on stage and compete on this level, like this new version of Alice. And the thing of it is, if you hear it, you know, if you watch it, yeah, you know, the band's heavy and it's all cool and everything. And the music is arranged. You know, I was really happy to be music director and everything, but Alice is way on top of it. You know, it's not like he's a 70s artist trying to deal with these young guns. He's like completely comes out like, you know, shooting from both barrels. And it's a pretty cool thing, you know, to witness. So, you know, and it comes, I think, partially because, you know, he and I just hooked up creatively and you know, spiritually as well. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I know we only have a few minutes left here, but a couple quick questions. Raise Your Fist and Yell. It did seem like you guys took the heaviness up a little bit, like with songs like Freedom and Roses on White Lace. I mean, especially Freedom was just such a powerful opening number for that track. Was there, again, was there an idea that, hey, we're going to take things even a little heavier, a little further with Raise Your Fist and Yell than we did on Constrictor?
Well, I think what happened was at the end of the tour, like Alice and I were writing during the tour, and we were getting sort of the feedback from the audience. When things were heavy, the audience got more intense. The response was more intense. You know, of course, everybody loved hearing those opening strains of the classics. But when we did something very heavy for them, you could just tell that, you know, it rocked their world. And the response that they gave to us, you know, was kind of the same feeling in kind. You know, that was the big thing about playing live. You know, when they come back at you, you know, that's sort of the information that you get that spurs you on to other stuff. So we got into the studio and, you know, of course the band was just super tight. Then we hit the ground running and our writing just reflected this sort of, this sort of dark, kind of heavy, you know, violent, you know, play on stage, you know, with Gale and Roses on White Lace and what was it, Prince of Darkness. You know, these are all songs that just happened for, and it was just, it seemed like a natural kind of evolution of who we are as writers and performers.
Right on, right on. And then after that, I mean, he did the Trash record, which I know you were on a little bit on that one, but your involvement with Alice kind of changed. When did you officially, and why did you officially leave the band?
Well, you know, I got a record deal on Geffen. Alice had moved on. I'm not sure if he changed labels or not, but he was now writing with Desmond, and I ended up doing a lot of writing with Desmond as well. So it was one of those things. It was kind of a natural evolution of things. You know, it just seemed to take place. We didn't sit down and have a meeting and discuss, you know, whatever. It just sort of happened. And, there have been times I've, you know, thought about, you know, getting on stage with him. He actually asked me to play with him when we were in Vancouver on Schools Out. I was unable to do it. But it was one of those things where I was, you know, I had such an amazing time with Alice, and he turned me into like a real musician, so to speak. You know, I became a pro, you know, and I learned, you know, so much from the guy. But it was just once again, you know, with Alice and I, there was just this flow of things that happened, and we just moved on. You know, it was one of those things. So, and I was able to concentrate on Saints and Sinners. You know, I really put my heart and soul in that. And, you know, if you have another project going on, it's a little difficult. So.
Right. I hear you. And that, of course, is the album you did with Desmond Child. So, yeah, what a career, Kane. And I'm so glad you're back. We've been missing you. And the new album, The New Normal, again, really, really strong stuff. We're going to play some music off it. And I highly recommend the listeners go out and give it a chance. Give it a listen. It's great stuff.
OK, well, thank you, Mark. I'm excited anytime. You want to hang out and talk on the phone or whatever, just give me a buzz.
Oh, cool, man. I'll take you up on that. Definitely, definitely. And, best of luck to you, and we'll be in touch for sure.
All right, rock on.
See you, Kane. Bye.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, stop pretending that you've never been bad. You're never wrong, and you've never been dirty. You're such a saint, that ain't the way we see you. Ah, you are a ruler with an iron hand. You change the lyrics and become Big Brother. This ain't Russia, you ain't my dad or mother. They never knew anyway, 'cause I never walk away from what I know is right. But I'm gonna turn my back. And yell,
Little Freedom by Alice Cooper featuring Kane Roberts on guitar. I love that song. So good. I saw him on that tour. That's the tour I saw him at the Boston Gardens in like downtown Boston. Great stuff. I think it was the only time I was at Boston Gardens. Because most of the shows, when I lived in Boston, most of the shows didn't happen in the city of Boston if they were arena shows. I mean, I remember seeing Megadeth there, and there was this theater that some of the metal bands and stuff would play at. I saw King Diamond in Boston at the clubs. But most of the concerts in the year I lived in Boston, you know, we'd have to go for the arena shows. We went down to Rhode Island for Kiss. We went out to Worcester for Rush. But I guess the one arena show that I saw in the city, the actual city of Boston, was Alice. And from what I remember, a lot of the big groups, like Kiss didn't play there on that tour. Rush didn't play there at that time. You know, so it was very cool to see an arena show in the actual city of Boston back in those days with Kane Roberts, Kip Winger, and Alice Cooper on the Raise Your Fist and Yell tour. Such great stuff. Love that song, Freedom. Love you guys for supporting me. Listen, consider the Patreon thing. I love the PayPal donations. You can keep giving those to me. Those are awesome. I love that you're buying T-shirts. Thanks to the recent batch of people who all purchased a Talking Metal T-shirt by sending $20 to my PayPal account and giving me their address and shirt size. Thanks to all you people. But if you go on Patreon and you pledge $5 a month or more, you also get a Talking Metal T-shirt. And as well as a lot of other stuff, including a podcast, a whole separate podcast. You get exclusive videos. You get first look at any Talking Metal video, including a recent one I threw up there of the band UDO that I shot a number of years ago and never used the footage. That's up there now or will be shortly. So there's lots of exclusive content. Going to look into the live stream thing, going to be doing a lot of stuff. I'm working with Emily and Victor Ruiz on the Patreon page to get you some exclusive content. And it's like Ron Keel said, it's like when you are on the Patreon page with me, I want to make it feel like you're in my house hanging out with my wife, me and my dog. Hopefully the kids will be asleep by that point. But, you know, I want it to feel like you're here, man. You're hanging. And I love Ron Keel's analogy. Like if you come and hang out with somebody, you bring a six pack, you bring some cookies, you bring something to the party. And that's all I'm asking, man, is that you pledge a little money to hang out and we will give you an exclusive hang. And yeah, I am excited to have more of you join me there. We had a little drop off, I guess some end of the year drop offs there, but which is kind of sad because, you know, it's only right now that we're really taking the Patreon page up to the next plateau, if you will. So please consider joining us on the Patreon page. Just go on Patreon and search Talking Metal or Mark Striegel, or just go to talkingrock.net or talkingmetal.com and just hit the support page there and you'll see Patreon and other ways you can support, like by using our Amazon links and whatnot. So that'll do it. All right, guys, thanks so much. To take us out, what are we going to do to take us out? Let's hit some good shit here. What can I play you guys? Yeah. Well, you know, Ron Keel's covering this song, so let's end with it. He mentioned it during the interview. This is Trashed. Now, Trashed is just a, you know, they never liked the mix on Born Again, but it's still a great record. I really think Born Again is right up there with the Ozzy era stuff, the Dio era stuff. I mean, Dehumanizer I didn't love quite as much. When I say Dio era, I mean Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules. You know, it's right up there with those. And in some ways, the last great Sabbath record, in my opinion, at least until 13. I loved 13. I know some people didn't. I thought the comeback with Ozzy was just fantastic. But yeah, so this is the opening cut off of that record. And Bill Ward did play on the record. He did, you know, as he did Heaven and Hell. A lot of people think, oh, Heaven and Hell, that was Vinny. No, that was Bill Ward. And he even played a handful of shows with them after Heaven and Hell came out, at which point Vinny joined up. And then, of course, Vinny played on Mob Rules, left with Dio to form Dio, at which point
Bill Ward's back in the fold, you know, briefly, just, I believe, for the album. And then I want to say it was it Bev Bevan who did the Born Again tour? I'm not sure. Oh, here we go. Trashed by Black Sabbath.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.